Not Alone podcast. I'm Samuel Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And today, we're back with part two of our Lunar Tales episode, which I have entitled Shoot for the Moon and Miss. Fall through the eternal misery and woe of endless space.
It's a good rough draft there.
Thank you.
We can really tidy that up, though.
You think it's too many words?
It's a bit wordy.
All right. Well, in any case, this is going to be our conclusion to our Lunar Tales episode. A part of me wanted to do episode three. A bigger part of me didn't. So guess which one won out, right? There are the two wolves inside of you. One of the wolves wants to talk more about the moon landing, and the other wolf wants to kill the first wolf.
Well, I thought one wolf chased the moon, the other one was the sun.
Oh, now we're back to the Norse. All right, all right.
Ragnarok?
It all goes around, comes around. All right, anyway. So thank you for that, Jason. So today, last week, we talked about Stanley Kubrick a lot. And if you have not watched The Shining, that episode probably didn't make any sense. And I'm sorry.
No idea what happened.
But this content...
Whoops.
This content, while I would say it is wilder, it is also more accessible. So ideally, even if you don't know anything about the moon, you'll be fine. Because the people whose theories we're going to be talking about here probably also don't know anything about the moon.
Which makes my head hurt.
So this is the last of our official Lunar Tales episode. Episodes are appendium to this, which we'll be putting out just for the patrons. Because honestly, I don't know that it's something all of our listeners want to hear, but it is why the moon landing could not possibly have been faked. So I'm going to let Jason tell me all about that. We're going to figure it out. He's going to be in the woods, though. So the information you get for that episode, you're just going to have to sit and look up at the moon and figure it out.
Okay? I'm fine with that. I'm going to be sitting on a glacier. It's going to be cool.
It is going to be cool. So we are going to dive right in here with a few of the most wild and ridiculous things I've ever heard. But before we do that, Jason, you have something to tell people.
We already covered it. I'm going to be gone next week.
No. Not that one.
Oh.
It's about something you guys did last week.
I know a few people have been a little bit interested with some of the more fun game topics we've talked about a little bit.
This is awesome. You're doing so great.
Isn't it? Anyway, if you'd like to, I was recently hanging out with Justin Zinger on Zing This, and we talked a lot about magic and some of the new things that are coming out and some new announcements from Wizards of the Coast with them, including modern predictions and also their hopefully amazing new Netflix series that will be coming out eventually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's actually the same guys, the Russo brothers, so the guys that directed Infinity War and Endgame are backing it pretty heavily.
That's pretty dope.
And they have at least one of the writers from Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, wow. I've heard that's amazing.
It is amazing.
I haven't watched it yet.
So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that Netflix pulls this off.
All right. And you also, did you play Magic when you talked to Zhang?
He did.
And you just got wrecked. Okay, cool.
I got whooped big time.
You got to give where giving is required. Give, I don't know what, I guess tribute. We are paying tribute to Zanger, because he destroyed my co-host, is now the rightful host of this show. You just let me know when you want to come on and take it over. So,
well, possibly if I get eaten by bears.
Yeah, that's true. Jason might die. This might be the last Jason episode. And then we'll have to go with his replacement.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Whose name I don't have a funny name for.
No.
I was going to say Hasten, but that's just...
What? All right. Anyway, rolling on here.
Well, I'm just wondering what I will do if you die.
All right. Let's not worry about that.
That sucks, man.
Why'd you won't know until you're in the moment.
That's true. This week, we're going to continue on our journey through the solar system, heading towards our big, beautiful moon. That moon which gives me such joy and peace when I look at it in the night. That moon which gives me such sorrow and anxiety as I circle portions of it with red markers and keep dossiers on those who have claimed to set foot on it. That moon upon the surface of which I plan to meet death one last time, when it is my turn to walk with him, hand in hand out of this blasted life, as we all must. As we all must. And yet, as I look forward to that great and glorious day when I finally leave all of this behind on the surface of the moon, I must reckon with one of the theories we mentioned on our last episode. Or, better said, that Brian of the Double Density podcast pointed towards as some sort of sick, beautiful, twisted prophet all those many years ago. This theory is propagated by a man with flawless silver hair and a sense of self-confidence that not even angels dare to espouse. And that man's name is, of course, Richard C. Hoagland.
I want to be him one day. No. I want someone to describe me like that one day. But when did you meet Death the first time?
You don't need to know. No one needs to know.
Fair enough. But on the moon, huh? We're just gonna launch you to space.
I have always wanted to die in space. Like, ever since I was a child, that was one of my wants.
That'd be Mom would cool be like, place to die.
What do you want to do when you grow up, Sam? And I was like, I want to die in the vacuum of space. That's it. So, I'm not going to do a lot of biography on Richard C. Hoagland, because we have a few different places to stop on this big, beautiful fake moon tour that we're going to go on here, a fake moon landing tour, depending on what we look at. But to me, he has one of the most compelling, or at least interesting, theories as to why we faked the moon landing. Because here's the thing, I think when we mentioned that we were talking about the moon landing being faked, a lot of people wanted us to talk about, like, the scientific objections of, like, why? Why do people think that? And what's the evidence? That's not what we're here for. This is not a Jason special. This is, if only. This is technically a conspiracies that Jason just doesn't understand episode.
Right, and I don't get it.
And those episodes are marked by a complete lack of reason and a complete lack of evidence in favor of these theories.
It's so bizarre.
So, we're just going to roll with this.
I mean, in that case.
He's just turning it off. That's fine.
No more notes.
That's your prerogative, man. So, right here.
I got you.
Right here. Okay. So, let's take a look. Let's see what Hoagland, what he wants. Oh, you don't have to. Let's see what he wants. Let's see who he is. Okay, so Hoagland fits into this special class of man that we talked about last time. One of those who has no problem with believing that we went to the moon, and even that we did it around the same time that we said we did. But rather, it's simply that what we found there prohibited the actual transmission of video or photos. Well, some photos are authentic, but none of the video could have reliably been sent back home. Not because of technological reasons. Not because we didn't know how. But because we were afraid of what it would reveal. And what it would reveal is stunning. Great glass castles in the sky.
Okay, Elsa.
You see, according to Hoagland, what we came face to face with on the moon was the ruins of a Type 2 civilization rated on the Kardashev scale. Now, a Kardashev scale, it's a scale that ranks stellar civilizations on a capacity of how well they can basically harness the energy of their environment. So, a Type 1 would be something that we are not yet, but maybe in the next hundreds to a few thousand years. Type 1 can adequately harness all of the energy output of its own planet. Okay?
Is Type 2 solar system? Is that what
type
you're...
Type 2.
It's star.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So that... The typical way of thought with that is like a Dyson sphere, right? Which you build around the sun or the star.
A series of mirrors. That's great.
Yeah, it's beautiful and amazing. And
we can do that. We just have to strip mine Mercury.
A Type 3, it harvests efficiently the entire energy output of its galaxy.
Sweet.
That's pretty wild. Yeah.
That's a lot of energy. Like, once you get to that stage, what are you going to use it all for?
I mean, you use it for like... approaching faster than light travel and teleportation and all sorts of crazy stuff. You could probably rip a hole in space-time if you could harness an entire galaxy.
I can't imagine.
That sounds like something Thanos would do.
It's too big of a number of energy for me to comprehend it whatsoever.
Yeah. Just imagine punching your hole through
anyway,
a door, but the door is reality.
Remnants of a civilization that was able to control its essentially the amount of output that its star was able to produce, which eventually allows them to do interplanetary, interstellar travel.
All sorts of stuff, including great big glass castles.
But why make it out of glass? Glass is not good, especially because the moon
gets
impacted by craters all the time, or asteroids all the time.
Glass
is
we're speaking more of the style rather than the substance. It's translucent.
Okay.
And it's shimmering and beautiful.
It's like Skyrim. Glass armor.
Just like Skyrim glass armor. Yeah, really exactly. Glass, but exactly.
It's shiny.
That's actually very good. Okay, here's the thing. He has airtight evidence about these ruins.
Okay, and but here's also the thing.
Okay.
The amount of, resources that the moon has versus the Earth.
They jumped ahead to type one really quick.
Makes no sense to me of why you would build a castle on the moon and not just Earth.
No, they're a lunar civilization. That's where they came from.
You're telling me.
Yeah, life evolved independently on the moon.
Without an atmosphere.
You know what, Jason?
Or water.
If that's the spirit you're bringing to this episode, we can turn it off right now. Because we have stranger roads to travel than this. Lunar dust
is so fine that it, shreds stuff to pieces.
That's pretty wild. That's what Mark was saying.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, that's how fine it is, which is insane.
And yet they captured it.
Okay.
They harnessed it. God,
this hurts me.
They created great big glass castles. There's some ASMR for you. Now, the ruins.
That stuff creeps me out. Now, that's scarier than a scary movie.
I know.
No, talk to me. Talk to me like a normal person. What are you doing?
We're adults, Janice. Now, the ruins, they can only be discerned through one very specific method, but it's a method that works. It's tried and it's true, and that method is taking photographs and cranking up the contrast until anomalies begin to appear. Now, this is what we highlighted in some of our images we included in the last episode's show notes, and we'll try to find a few more to include in this one. See, while some proponents of the Kubrick did it idea claim that these are flaws in the projection screen used to create that background of space, right. Hoagland believes that these flaws, These visual anomalies, are the outlines of castles or lights reflecting off of these massive towers.
Only when you bump up the contrast, right?
Only when you blast the contrast. There are one or two.
That just seems like it'd be painful to look at.
There are one or two that you can see something normally, but it very well could be a flaw with the camera itself or the lens. As opposed to that. The other thing about these photographs, I read somewhere that you can't actually, especially on a photograph, printed photograph, you can't actually make something flat black. Because of just how things are printed, it's not going to work out. But the other thing is, the photographs that he was using were 30-year-old photographs that had sat in a file folder in a desk.
Oh, dear, no.
So he knows what he's about.
Proper storage.
What he's about is not ruling out all of the external factors that could be causing this. Richard C. Hoagland is expressly not about that. But if you do take a 30-year-old photo and put it on your scanner and scan it and blast the contrast, then these shapes just appear.
I feel like we do that any photo, though.
Oh, all the time.
Okay, perfect.
All the time. I love blast and contrast. It's awesome. Now,
finding what you can see. God.
Hoagland claims that when we landed on the moon, we came face to face with the ruins of a civilization which we can only hope to rival, according to Michio Kaku, who is a prominent and not kooky spooky physicist. He's a real person.
Okay.
Writing real books that I have. They're on this shelf somewhere.
So wait, he's not kooky, but he is spooky?
No, he's not spooky or kooky. He's Michio Kaku, and he's amazing.
So he's a futurist.
He's a legitimate scientist.
Okay. Yes. All right.
Yeah, he writes a lot about future tech and all of that and extra dimensional stuff, but from a legitimate scientific point of view. Yeah.
Cool.
You can borrow his books.
That sounds exciting.
Fantastic.
I'll wait for the movie.
Okay.
All right. Eventually, he'll do like a Discovery Channel.
He's been on a few. He was on, you know what he was on?
Into the Cosmos.
Let's do another freaking detour. He might have been on Cosmos, but what he absolutely was on multiple times. Did you ever see Into the Wormhole?
No, I did not actually get to see that.
Amazing, dude.
Into the Wormhole. I'll have to look it up.
So it's Morgan Freeman.
Yes.
And he is just posing these questions of future tech and like mixing science and God together. It's amazing. He's like a freaking magician, wild man. And Michio Kaku's on there a lot because he's the best person to talk about these things because he's amazing. Now he says, sorry, the whole point we're talking about Michio Kaku is that he says that we could not become a type 2 planetary civilization until about 10,000 years from right now. That is our best case scenario for getting to the level.
That's if we don't kill ourselves first.
Well, I just hope we make it 60 years. My kids can figure it out themselves.
That's everyone's stance.
It is. We're all gonna die. Anyway. I forgot. Oh, yeah. So that's the point when we'll be able to make a Dyson sphere. We'll be able to harness the output of the sun. And the civilization that we came in contact with on the lunar surface had already done that and died off and turned to dust by the time we got there. So if anybody knows why that can't be true, let me know. I don't. I didn't decide to do that research. I did this research. See, this is Hoagland's personal view. And he has some good reasons, he thinks, for believing this view, which you can hear.
Hold on.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to backtrack for a
second. Yeah, feel free. Yep.
This was a civilization.
Yep.
That evolved on the moon.
Yeah. Moon evolution. Moonvolution.
That's all. That's my whole statement. That's all I wanted to make sure.
Does the E in evolution, does the E in evolution stand for Earth? And if it does,
no.
Can we call it Mivolution for moon evolution?
Go away.
Damn. Okay. Hoagland used to, or maybe currently still does, have a podcast called The Other Side of Midnight. I don't know if he currently still has it because his webpage has not been updated since the Bush presidency. So who knows?
I mean, neither has the Space Jam website, and that's still running. If you ever want to go back to like 1996 Space Jam website.
Can you just type in spacejam.com? You don't have to use like the Wayback Machine.
I think it's just spacejam.com.
You do that and I'll do this.
Let's find out for sure.
Very everyone. Important things that we're working on here.
In case you want some 90s nostalgia.
Now, this idea that we stumbled across a pre-existent civilization on the moon, so far as I can tell, is pretty much the exclusive property of Richard C. Hoagland, trademark LLC.
Spacejam.com.
Oh, for God's
sake. That's all you gotta do. Look at it. Isn't it beautiful?
I'm just glad they kept it up, man.
Way, way back.
Oh, Warner boy. Brothers is still paying that hosting fee.
That's insane.
That's pretty wild.
1996.
What a time to be alive or dead.
Whoa. Warner Studios Store. Space Jam.
Are you trying to get Space Jam merch on our podcast?
Heck yeah, dude.
Hell yeah.
It's all not right. Loading.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Oof. At least the store isn't. Maybe I can play something.
You feel free to do that. Oh,
it just took me to normal Warner Brothers shop. Oh, that makes me sad. Anyway.
What did you think was going to happen, Jason?
I expected that you would,
is there a warehouse out there with one warehouse of Space Jam stuff? And people were like, you passed my test. You've made it to the Space Jam online store. It was only activated 13 days ago. You had to wait 20 years for the sick-ass Space Jam tank top.
Oh man, just wait for the Space Jam Supreme collab.
Oh God, no.
Streetwear is gonna be insane.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
As far as I know, Hoagland's like the only person saying this specifically about the glass castles. Anybody else saying it got it from Hoagland. Now, these castles appear to be up to 6 miles high, and they have been there for hundreds, if not thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years. Now, it's worth looking at some of the other claims, though, that he has made primarily about himself, because I'm not a scientist.
Is he a wizard?
He's as close to a wizard as we can get, and I'll tell you why in a moment. Not right now, because I have some other things first.
Of course.
It's actually how I round out this section on him. Hoagland has done a lot more for the general populace, and to the general populace, than to popularize this theory. See, according to himself and himself only, Hoagland is also a contractor who has worked very, very closely with NASA.
Naturally.
He visits NASA every year, multiple times. Like a lot of people do, because you can just go visit NASA. You don't have to be a scientist to go as a tourist to NASA. He is a superfly scientist and mathematician, although by his own admission, he has no more than a high school education, which is not necessarily faulting him for anything, but just good to know. He claims that he was the first to posit that Europa, a moon of Jupiter, had a liquid ocean beneath its surface, and while this is not a bad theory and may even be true, he is absolutely definitely not the first person to posit it. He is also the co-creator of the plaques on Pioneer 10 and 11, which show the galactic location of Earth as well as the anatomy of human beings. Does that ring any bells for you, those plaques?
No.
We slapped them on spaceships and sent them to the stars because we figured if there's intelligent life out there, it would be best to tell them our home address and what we look like naked.
So you can eat us.
just in case. That was Carl Sagan's idea, and I'm proud of him for it. He doesn't have to face the consequences. But it is also worth noting that Hoagland was not involved in this at all.
You know, it's probably a good thing that happened then, because if we did that with our generation, it would just be like the goodest boy. We would just send dog memes. Look what we have. We did this. They used to be wolves.
What is wolf? Anyway, it would be...
This is Baron.
I really do want to buy one of those big old dishes that you can point toward stars and transmit things. And I would really like to transmit memes. I think that would be a very good idea. It is either going to entice them or it is going to keep them away from here. And either way, if they're the kinds of people who see a funny meme and are like, I'm going to travel 14 million light years to get there for this meme, that's who I want.
Joke's on them. We're already on a new meme.
Yeah, I know. Memes last like a day now.
Yeah,
it's wild.
It's crazy.
What's going to happen? We'll talk about that.
Hours.
We'll talk about
it's just going to keep going faster and faster.
Especially once they like put stuff in our brains, right? And we can access the internet from our mind.
Oh, man.
It's going to be instantaneous. Like, we're all going to get the
joke.
I'm
just going to be standing here and be like,
yeah, exactly. We're all going to get the joke at the same time. We're all going to laugh about the joke. 14 million people will make a variation on the joke, and then we'll move on.
God, we're going to be so depressed.
Whoa.
That instant gratification.
This is a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, it is.
That's the second time today I said this. So
oh, dear.
Maybe this is a Black Mirror episode. And then he was the official science advisor for Coast to Coast until like 2015. So that one's true. And I got to say, it's a real shame. I'm really...
For him or Coast to Coast?
Coast to Coast.
Okay.
I love Coast to Coast. I'm sad about this. That's fine, though. And here's what he did. He took very, very real credit for this. He defended this vehemently.
Did it not age well?
He was the first person to say that on the internet, no one knows you're a dog.
What?
He's the first. You know that TV show, Dog with a Blog?
No, I don't.
You don't know the Dog with a Blog TV show? It was on Disney. It's for the Gen Zers. It's not for us.
Ah, okay.
But it's about a dog with a blog. And the only reason this came about is because it became like a meme to say on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. And Richard C. Hoagland is saying that it's him. He's the one who said it. That's not true. He seems like the kind of guy to me who's like, oh, no one knows where this came from. I did it. Nobody knows where this came from. It was me, Richie C. Prove me wrong. Guess what? We can. We can.
Oh, dear.
And we have. Somebody trolled the internet to find the exact first time that that phrase was written, and it was like in 1996.
God, so can we not just harness that and use it
to
positively?
Do something better? It was the people on Rational Wiki, who I am just so proud of. They're the best. Shout
I do
out.
Like that one. I like that one
great.
Quite a lot.
Shout out Rational Wiki.
1996, huh?
Yeah. This is actually the last thing I want to say about him.
Same year as
Space
Jam.
Well, last thing that he says about what he says about himself, he also serves on the board of directors for the American Anti-Gravity Association.
What?
Yep. So there's that.
It's an association of Americans that don't want gravity?
Well, now this is an interesting.
Yeah. What is that?
It is an association. This is how I understood it. I did no research. It's an association of people who are interested in discovering anti-gravity. You took it from more of a political view, and I'm proud of that.
What do you mean discovering anti-gravity?
Making it work.
Okay.
Utilizing anti-gravity.
Just go
Why?
To space.
Who knows?
To float, clearly.
We're here to suck the gravitrons out of everything. And then my microphone will do
that. That sounds like that sounds like the next villain from Incredibles 3. So, needless to say,
he has
a weird resume. It's a strange one. I would not hire him.
No, definitely not. Now, here's the only thing about Richard C. Hoagland that I enjoy. And it's that I don't even know if his claims came out after this because, or if they came out before this because they may have. Anyway, I didn't do my research. I'm sorry. I was researching other things that we're about to talk about. But his great glass castles in the sky paired with a super advanced godlike civilization, these castles on the moon, glass, gods, what are we talking about here?
Oh, no.
We're talking about Watchmen. And Richard C. Hoagland is making Watchmen real. And he seems to me to be, in fact, his entire persona, everything that it does to me, it puts me in the spot of Dr. Manhattan, wherein I am the one floating through the vacuum of space saying, I'm tired of this Earth, these people. I'm tired of being caught in the tangles of their lives. In any case, that's all I have to say about Richard C. Hoagland.
Dr. Manhattan was pretty metal.
He was the best. I saw that same quote, but with Sonic the Hedgehog, the new Sonic the Hedgehog floating in
the
space.
The horrible.
Yes, the Sonic. The travesty.
Oh, man. I'm so glad they're remaking him.
I know.
Him.
Me too. Richard C. Hoagland will make a surprise guest appearance near the end of this episode, but we're going to leave him in the past for now. I'm done with him. It's a great theory.
Is it?
It's crazy.
Okay.
And it got me.
There we go.
It gave me a lot of laughs and joys talking about it. It did not do so while I was researching it. But the thing is, it's not the only theory of its kind regarding a greeting party. Like I said, nobody else is out here talking about the remnants of a long dead civilization. Maybe they are. I don't know. But are you okay?
I know what we're about to talk about.
But there's another subset of this theory that I would say is better propagated regarding a greeting party for the Apollo astronauts. Now, this subset of theories doesn't account for us not going to the moon, but it does very, very well explain, very much like Hoagland, why we never went back.
And before we dive completely into it, I would probably say like tinfoil hat warning here.
Oh,
yeah.
You're going to need
it. In case you haven't realized that yet, be prepared. This one's a doozy.
You're going to need it.
Sam, what are we talking about?
The reason that Stanley Kubrick or somebody else had to fake this footage, the reason why we've never gone back to the moon, the reason why...
It's expensive and dangerous?
No.
Okay.
You want to give me another guess?
Because certain people don't want us to?
That's pretty close. Now, see, before the lunar lander actually touched down on the surface of the moon, it orbited the moon, which took it around the infamous dark side of the moon. Now, there is, of course, no dark side of the moon other than Pink Floyd. There is no dark side of the moon. There is a far side of the moon. See, the moon is locked in like a tidal lock.
It doesn't spin.
Yeah. So basically, there is a side that we never see. It is definitely not dark.
No, it gets sunlight, guys.
The right amount of sunlight.
It still like orbits us, which is orbiting the sun.
It's fine. Now, they go around, right? And well, just as a side note, a lot of these conspiracies do have to do with the so-called dark side of the moon, under the impression that it never receives light or only very little light. But like we said, that's just not true. So this particular variation on the dark side of the moon theme, because that's what this is. I don't know if you've, like...
A Transformers movie?
No. No. It's like classical music, where, or like jazz, where you have a variation on a theme. You have a something that rings throughout, and then it pops up here and there, but it's transformed. It's different. It's not Transformers, though. And it's just... It's the same thing, but it's different. And it's beautiful in every case, other than this specific case. Because this particular variation on the theme about what happened was popularized, if not invented entirely, by a man who is from time to time rightly called the granddaddy of modern conspiracy. His name was William Milton Cooper, and he went by Bill, and he did not pay his taxes, and he got killed for it. Bill Cooper is an insane individual. He, like, openly...
I'm scared.
He had a radio show, and he was like, I'm not paying my taxes. Right. If you try to come get me, I'm gonna kill every cop you send. So guess what? The cops were freaked out. He came out. They lured him out of his house. They put a car, and they just made it play really loud music for a period of time. And Cooper was the kind of person... Who could not stand that?
Yeah, I get that. You just have to give me garlic bread.
Yeah, and so he comes out, and they're like, William Milton Cooper, this is the FBI. I don't know. This is somebody. We're cops.
The IRA.
The IRA. IRS.
There we go. Whoops.
This is the IRS. They gave us guns. Surrender. And this is where it stops being funny, because then Cooper shot a guy in the head, and then they shot Cooper, and now he's dead. That's the truth of what happened here. You get all of
Did
these.
You mean to rhyme?
Whoa. Oh, you get all of these ridiculous conspiracy theories. It's like they killed Cooper because he knew too much. No, they didn't. He shot a guy. That's a pretty good reason, I would say. But in any case, that's our little rundown of Bill Cooper. But he published a book in 1991 called Behold a Pale Horse. Now, the title of this book is a quote not from the Johnny Cash song, but from the Book of Revelation, chapter 6, verse 8, which states, quote, "And I looked, and behold a pale horse, and its rider's name was Death, and Hell followed him. And they were given authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword and with famine and with pestilence and by wild beasts of the earth," unquote. The book is a manifesto of Illuminati conspiracy theory. And
there it is. The
reason,
that's what I was waiting for.
The reason that he called it Behold a Pale Horse is because in his personal life philosophy, the Illuminati was planning to kill at least a fourth, if not a lot more, of the entire world population. That's like their end goal, is population control, which is a very common theme when you look at Illuminati conspiracy.
They're doing a bad job.
Yeah. We're going to stick, while we could talk about the Illuminati for literally days, we're going to stick to one very, 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 very specific part of Cooper's Illuminati madness, and that specific attribute goes by the name Luna. Hello, Harry. I'm Luna Lovegood, and I'm a secret base on the backside of the moon built by extraterrestrials.
Oh, I hate this. Are you having a breakdown?
Yeah, dude.
Okay, good. Because you should be.
This is wild.
This is horrible.
It's amazing. Okay, so this is according to Cooper. Cooper is another one of those people who tried to pass himself off as something he was not. Like, about a Navy's special information consultant specialist, when he wasn't. But, according to Cooper, when Apollo 11 flew around the far side of the moon, they saw something that they were very, very, very not expecting to see. See, he claims, with all the authority of a naval intelligence expert, which all evidence claims that he was not, that the astronaut saw a very large base on the backside of the moon. Now, he claimed that it was a docking station for the alien mothership and also a mining operation which extracted vital resources from beneath the surface of the moon. He also claimed that there were tunnels under the moon that could be seen. Now, there is a recording of the astronauts as they rounded the moon before going dark until they came back around. The dialogue seems innocent enough, but for those with a certain frame of mind, it's the smoking gun in all of this. Buzz Aldrin starts. He says, "That's a spectacular crater. And then Collins, who is often forgotten. There was a person named Collins, who is not Buzz Aldrin or Neil Armstrong. I don't even know his first name.
That just shows how forgotten he was.
Collins says, "Boy, there must be nothing more desolate than the inside of some of these craters, these conical ones." Then Armstrong replies, "People that live in there probably never get out." Collins says, "Oh my God, look at that Mulkey," which I guess means crater. "He's my favorite. Look at him. Do you see all those roads, those triangular roads leading right past him?" And then they went dark. They didn't go dark because they crashed and died. They went dark because communication drops sometimes. That's fine. Some people think that this means they saw a literal person in a crater and a literal road. It is the same kind of thing that used to happen with Mars. And people are like, "Ah, there's canals on Mars because Martians built canals." Not because Jason's whole thing of pareidolia, wherein we just see what we want to see. But I would guess that they probably didn't even think they saw a person in the crater. Or a real road. Am I wrong? Who knows?
Buzz probably knows.
Oh man, Buzz Aldrin. What a guy.
Treasure.
Now,
what a treasure.
To most of us, like I said, that's going to sound fine. Now, Armstrong supposedly mentioned something about people living there. Collins mentioned these roads, but again, they're most likely not being serious. However, for Bill Cooper, they were being serious. They saw something real, they saw something huge, and it was Luna, the moon base that the aliens have built. Now, in some of the more unhinged tellings of the variations of this, the moon base is actually ran by the Nazis. See, going back to Hoagland for a moment, and this is not the part where I said we'd go back to Hoagland. I forgot this was here. There is yet another Hoagland intrusion into your psychic space here coming up very shortly.
I am so thrilled.
Going back to Hoagland, one of his most well-known works is called Dark Mission, wherein Hoagland and another author by the name of Mike Barra make the claim that from the start, Nazis was founded by, or not Nazis, NASA, it's funny how similar they sound, though. NASA was founded by Nazis,
Sam,
for Nazis.
You're sounding a bit...
Woo!
Yeah.
I love
a bit of that.
I love it.
I am terrified.
Because of Project Paperclip, right? This all comes from Project Paperclip. And to me, I think that it's the United States' own fault for doing something like Project Paperclip, and that they deserve all of these ridiculous conspiracy theories that come with them. I personally try to be a good person and don't think that I deserve to have to go through all of these conspiracy theories, but that's fine. Now, once the astronauts actually touched down on the moon, it became obvious what the huge, awe-inspiring structure that they had actually seen was. Now, there's no good descriptions of this base other than it's very large and maybe round. I don't know. I kind of picture it as the Apple spaceship, you know, the new campus down in Cupertino. That's what I think of it. The ring.
It's what Sonic is trying to find.
What if that was true?
It is.
That'd be pretty wild.
I know it.
Now, according...
We didn't paint it gold, so it can't be true.
We did it to hide it from Sonic. It is gold. We painted it other colors.
Ah,
yes.
We're sneaky, aren't we?
According to an unnamed professor who claimed to have spoken with Neil Armstrong, and if you're going to claim to have spoken to Neil Armstrong,
you be unnamed?
I would really like it if you would tell me your name, sir. But, whatever. On the moon, they found a whole lot more concerning details than a giant moon base. I know how that sounds. You would think the moon base is the most concerning detail. But Armstrong says that's wrong. See, he told this unnamed professor, and this story, might I add, came out after Armstrong died, but he told this unnamed professor, quote, "We were warned off. There was never any question then of a space station or a moon city. I can't go into details except to say that their ships were far superior to ours in both size and technology."
Why does he sound like
there
that?
"There is no question of a space station," unquote. Now, and that's something that actually does resonate with me a little bit, is that when we went to the moon, Katie was actually, if any of you follow Humans of New York, do you know Humans of New York?
Yes, I'm aware.
Yeah, it's a great, great page, great
thing.
I don't know, thing, yeah. And one of their more recent ones.
Blog?
Yeah. What even is a blog these days?
I don't know.
A blog?
I just assume a blog is like an online article thingy.
Right on. So, like, on Humans of New York, there was this old guy who did a lot of research with the moon and, like, was one of the first people who took, like, moon dust and put it under a mass spectrometer and all of that. And
just don't breathe in. He'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, and he talked about how before we went to the moon, everyone was like, hell yeah, let's go to the moon and let's build a space station. And then when we came back from the moon, suddenly people just forgot about that. And this whole idea of, like, moon cities. And then you have Newt Gingrich from, like, the 2008 election who was like, if elected, I will put cities on the moon. But that never happened. Now, granted, he wasn't elected. But as soon as he announced that, the mainstream media made fun of him. And the only reason they would do that, if they were owned by people who didn't want us to put a city on the moon.
Oh, God.
So you just sit with that, because I've sat with that for a very long time now. According to a person...
Hold on. Go ahead. It is one thing to put a person on the moon. It is another thing to...
Be a person on the moon.
It's another thing to essentially establish a colony on the moon. We're talking about, like, being able to supply long enough before they can actually do their own thing.
We used to dream things in this country.
I mean, yeah. Used to.
We don't dream anything anymore.
No.
We're like Cthulhu.
Reality crushes us.
Well, no, Cthulhu's dreaming.
Anyway.
I'm sorry. In a sunken city.
Again, like, colonizing versus just putting someone on the moon is two totally different things. That, we don't fund NASA enough.
And if we look at colonization through history, I mean, really, do we want to do that to the moon and its inhabitants? That's going to destabilize the entire region. And then, I've been watching a lot of Anthony Bourdain No Reservations.
Oh, man, I love it.
It's amazing.
So good.
All right. Oh. So, according to a person, thank you for your comments. I'm moving forward.
Yeah, of course, naturally.
According to a person claiming to be a former NASA employee, his name was Otto Binder, he also came forward with claims regarding transmissions received from the surface of the moon. See, Armstrong and the others ended up broadcasting on a super secret channel, so the rest of NASA and the general public couldn't hear what they were saying. The most shocking of these secret messages, which were meant for only the very, very, very highest up, and I don't know how Binder was supposed to have gotten that, because he wasn't, but whatever. The most shocking of these messages was from Armstrong, and he said, quote, "These babies are huge, sir. Enormous. Oh my God, you wouldn't believe it. I'm telling you, there are other spacecraft here, lined up on the far side of the crater edge. They're on the moon. And they're watching us." Unquote. Now, there's...
We'll give them a show.
There's only... Hello, my baby. Hello. Buzz, that's get the lights. There are no lights. It's the moon. Well, there were lights.
Everything's lit.
That's true. There's only one problem with this, and that is that Otto Binder himself was not a NASA employee. So far as I can tell, he never even claimed to be. Instead, he wrote comic books for Marvel and sci-fi tales on the side. Now, he absolutely was somebody who wrote about UFOs, having quite a few books out about them, but whether or not he actually said or wrote that quote, so often attributed to him, attributing it to Armstrong, there's no evidence that he actually ever claimed to work for NASA. Supposedly, Buzz Aldrin is also in on this, as he would have to be. Although, because he is still living, not a lot of quotes are attributed to him without sourcing.
Wow.
Wow. I am not going to be surprised when, within 3 years of Buzz Aldrin dying, God forbid, suddenly there's a lot more evidence for these theories. But... whatever.
Just shoot me now.
Instead, Buzz Aldrin makes a living. He doesn't make a living doing it. He just does it. Yeah. Punching people in the face.
Well, he's retired. He's got to have something to do.
And granted, like, this story about him punching the conspiracy theorist in the face, like, this conspiracy theorist ran up to him and, like, got right in his face and started assaulting him and being like, "You didn't go to the moon, admit it. You didn't go to the moon," and just, like, screaming at him. And Buzz was just like, "I got to get out of here," and he punches the guy, and then that guy immediately tried to sue Buzz Aldrin. So it's almost like one of those people who jumps in front of a Lexus, and the Lexus is a national treasure. Now, we've done a good job. An amazing job. I don't know why I wrote it that way. A good job of examining this theory from the surface of the moon.
Oh no.
showing that all of the military and NASA people involved with saying that there was a cover-up, or at least the most prominent or famous ones, they never actually said such a thing. Or, if they said something like that, they are lying about who they are and what their credentials are. However, there is one other group of people, and one other aspect to the great lunar cities that we need to look at. And it's the people who were not only not there, but their entire job is to not go places. And then talk about those places that they don't go.
They sound like us.
Of course. They're travel bloggers. Well, no, because they go places. Of course, I'm talking about remote viewing. Remote viewing is something that we've referenced on this show before. I'm almost certain, indirectly. We were actually going to have our second episode of this show be about the United States official foray into remote viewing via the CIA with a project called Stargate, but it never materialized. It probably will now, because we just gotta take what we've got. In any case, it is a very well-known phenomena in the paranormal realm, but for those who don't know what I'm talking about, basically, it is what it sounds like. Remote viewing, seeing something from very far away. And by very far, I mean about 150 million miles from Earth. See, remote viewing, especially as undertaken under laboratory conditions like in Stargate, usually worked like this. The remote viewer was given a sealed envelope with coordinates of a place. They would then hold this envelope, which remained sealed, and would use this ability of theirs to see what was going on at that location, either at that time, or they added another dimension of it, where they gave them a specific time to view it.
See, what I don't understand is, why did they have to give it to them sealed? Like, yeah. Hey, here's the coordinates. Oh, let's make it one harder. It's in the envelope now.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Yes?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's sealed. You know, they can't see it. So any hits that they get, it's very much like Battleship, where you have hits and misses.
How do you possibly verify?
But unbeknownst to the people, the remote viewers themselves, it wasn't always on the face of this planet that their tools were required. Now,
how would they not know?
What do you mean?
Like, I mean, from what they view, wouldn't they know that it's not Earth?
Right. But they don't know that it's not Earth before they do their viewing.
Oh,
right.
Okay. I'm following.
Another one of these hits that supposedly happened, people like gave them coordinates for places on Mars. And they talked about like this red, rusty land. And they couldn't tell much more about it, but they saw that. So, anyway, the most notorious individual, the most important individual, when it comes to remote viewing, and especially the United States' involvement in remote viewing, is a man by the name of Ingo Swann. See, Swann was a big part of why the Stargate project even came about. And he is one of those who can be best understood as either the inventor or the discoverer or the popularizer, I don't know how we want to talk about this quality, of remote viewing, along with Hal Puthoff, who is my arch nemesis. Hal Puthoff, who was the head of Bigelow's National Institute of Discovery Science. Hal Puthoff, who fed the CIA information about MKUltra, or something like that. I don't know. He's wrapped up in that somewhere. Hal Puthoff, who even now sits on the board of the Academy of Arts and Sciences to the Stars, shows up here as well. This show is about Hal. His involvement in this project can, in his words, Ingo Swann, sorry, in his words, be traced back to the meeting with a strange man who went by the name of Mr. Axelrod, or Axelrod. Now, this meeting took place in the National Museum of Natural... I don't know why I said it that way. This meeting took place in the National Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian, which is the same place that I saw the Fang Deer, which completely ruined my life. However, when he was there, they may or may not have had this deer. They may or may not have had the giant squid, which is the only other thing that I remember. Maybe I'll go back one day. Maybe I won't. But in any case, Mr. Swann didn't go for the giant squid. He didn't go for the Fang Deer. He went for the top secret assignment. See, he was told to meet Axelrod at this location once everything was shut down. he and Mr. Axelrod, they agree to go to this second location. He's blindfolded and taken in a car. This is a big no. It's a personal safety thing. Finally, they arrive at some kind of an underground base. And once there, he was offered an enormous sum of money to perform his skills in regards to the big, beautiful rock in the sky, the moon. And as soon as he did, he got a hit, and a big one at that. See, he saw a 500-foot-tall structure on the surface of the moon, built not by man nor carved by nature, but rather by extraterrestrials. In subsequent channeling sessions, Swan would see a number of structures on the moon, complete with mining operations and underground tunnels. He saw machines that he could not describe, and multiple individual structures which seemed to create one mega superstructure, a gigantic moon base, full of people. People that appeared very human, and also very naked. I don't know why. Why would one need to be naked on the moon, Jason? Can you tell me that?
The exact opposite.
So you're
exact
saying...
Exact opposite.
You're saying these people could not have been human.
Oh, dear.
You're saying...
I'm saying this is all made up. I mean, come on. If they're paying him to come up with ludicrous ideas about the moon...
Yeah, maybe
he's going.
Maybe don't pay people to do this.
Crazy ideas about the moon and tell you what you want to hear.
That is true. I'm going to disregard that. These meetings went on for 2 years, but they ended one unexpected day with a terrifying twist for Mr. Swan. See, while observing these naked human-like aliens, he became aware that they were aware. They knew someone was watching them. It was almost as if they turned their gaze exactly at the invisible psychic camera that Swan had trained on them. And as he announced this to the room, Axelrod promptly freaked out and forced him to break his trance. Swan was informed that he had messed up big time, which seems a little unfair given that he was just doing what he had been told to do and had been doing for years, but the program was shut down immediately, and Swan was told that he needed to be ready for some sort of cosmic comeuppance. Those things were aware of him and his power, and they would come for him. He later learned that these things weren't only on the moon. They walk among us, on our nude beaches, and in our strip clubs. Wherever there are naked humans, they are there.
Oh no, the gym showers.
The gym showers. Now that's not
that
technically
explains so much.
While what I just said is true, it is not technically what Swan said. He thinks that they learned how to wear clothes.
You don't say.
So that makes it even scarier.
It is advanced technology, these
clothes. It is advanced. This shirt, it's got like that sweat wicking technology.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Wow. And you had to learn how that works in order to wear it.
I remember learning about slavery. I remember thinking about how tragic it was that people were born and lived and died in slavery, that they had their entire lives stolen from them. I remember thinking, you know what, if I was alive in that time, I would have been an abolitionist. I would have fought for freedom, and there's no way that 200 years down the line, my descendants would look back and say, oh no, what did great-great-great-grandpa Sam do? Now, of course, this could only be a hypothetical, or at least that's what I thought, until I learned one of the most shocking facts that I've ever come across, which is that there are more people in slavery today than there ever has been before. Estimates place the number of slaves worldwide at between 20 and 70 million individuals. Now, one of the most disturbing manifestations of modern-day slavery is sexual slavery, and especially the commercial sexual exploitation of children. There are an estimated 5 million individuals trapped in sexual slavery as I speak, with 99% of those individuals being women and girls. 5 million people forced into a life of violence, sexual abuse, and pain. Now, when I learned about this, I realized that if I was going to sit here and do nothing, that I did have something to be ashamed of. I realized that if I was going to say, well, it's not really important to me, it doesn't affect me, it's not happening to my sister, it's not happening to my mother, then I needed to take a hard look at who I was and who I wanted to be. And so, while looking for a way to help, I came across an amazing organization that's headquartered right here in my hometown of Boise, Idaho. This organization is called Wipe Every Tear, and Wipe Every Tear is committed to bringing hope and healing into the lives of women trafficked in the sex trade in the Philippines. This is an organization that literally goes into brothels and rescues everyone they can. Their youngest has been much too young. Their oldest was a 52-year-old grandmother who they rescued, and they rescued her two daughters as well. Now, they pay off the debts that entrap women in sex slavery, and then once they're rescued, Wipe Every Tear doesn't just drop them. They give these women a place to live. They feed them. They give them medicine. And then they do something really remarkable. They pay for them to go to university and get a higher education. For instance, that 52-year-old grandmother, once she had been rescued, she went and became a social worker because she wanted to help others. They provide these precious individuals not only with freedom, but with the ability to make sure that they and their family never again find themselves trapped by slavery of any kind. This is not sending money to a faceless organization and hoping for the best. This is breaking the cycle of slavery and poverty forever, and it is a truly amazing organization that takes liberation into its own hands. This is your opportunity to help, to do the work of liberation and freedom around the world. And if you go to wipeeverytear.org, you'll find multiple ways of getting involved. From donating your money, to donating your time, to volunteering to actually go to the Philippines and help rescue these girls. I'd like to challenge you to refuse to do nothing. Help be the end of evil and slavery in the world. Be on the right side of history. Thank you so much. There are literally dozens, if not hundreds, of reports of live remote viewing on the moon. And all that may seem to jive with these reports. And while we may take a closer look at Stargate and Ingo Swan at a later date, it's time that we swing our cosmic camera to one last theory about the moon landing and its origin before we wrap up. And that is, of course, that the Masons did it.
They built the moon, huh?
We're not there yet.
Oh, goody.
Now, because we are not a conspiracy podcast, and I can't stress that enough.
Yeah, you could have surprised me there.
We haven't actually spent a lot of time talking about the Freemasons on our show over the last 100 episodes. This is by design. I don't understand a lot of the conspiracy about the Freemasons, and I don't particularly care to understand a lot of this conspiracy, and I'm not saying that there's nothing there, although there probably isn't. Instead, I'm saying that it just doesn't interest me.
There's no spooks.
There's no kooks. Well, they might all be kooks.
True.
But there's nothing supernatural going on, or at least that's what I think.
At least on the surface.
Exactly.
They just seem like they're organized.
It's very similar for me to, like, the Illuminati. I don't care about the Illuminati. Like, even if the Illuminati is real, I have decided to not let it affect my life.
I mean, that's not you to decide.
Right, that's true. Isn't but that I will always have this. I'm pointing to my brain. They can never take that from me.
You're already in the Matrix.
I know, that was exactly what I thought. No, but I don't care. Like, even if all of the Illuminati conspiracy theories and Mason theories are true, I just don't care. It's just not interesting to me. But this is a great theory. So we're going to talk about it. It's very good. Now, basically, for those who don't know, the idea as to why the Freemasons so often get wrapped up in conspiracy, especially if their origins are to be believed as going back as builders of the Temple of Solomon, which, spoiler alert, that's not where they come from. The idea is that they are a shadowy society that rule the world. Now, depending on the hierarchy that your particular conspiracy dictates, the Masons may not be at the top of the pyramid, or they may be. If they're at the top, they're the top. If not, they are usually one of a They are a secondary level. The very top of the pyramid, of course, is the Illuminati. Unless there's a secret top of the pyramid, which is the reptilians. But in any case, we're going to keep it 3D and not 4D. And we're looking at the Illuminati on the top. And then it's typically represented as like 7 or 10 groups, either 3, 7, or 10 groups underneath the Illuminati, one of which is the Masons. Now, these groups rule the world. They run everything, and there's nothing we can do to stop them. It's the battle's already been lost. So, whatever. Why does this matter? Why are we talking about the Freemasons? Why do we care?
Yes, Sam. Why?
I'm so glad you asked.
For
better or worse, Buzz Aldrin, conspiracy theorist, puncher extraordinaire, is and was at the time of the Apollo 11 moon landings a Freemason. This is literally the only objective reason as to why this is even a thing, so far as I can tell. But even if there were no Masons on the moon, somebody would try to take it back to them and tie it to them, as they always do. So we might as well just get on with it. There are definitely some interesting connections between overtly Masonic elements and the Apollo 11 moon landings.
No. No. Why do you hurt me?
You have Buzz Aldrin. Okay? Yeah. He's a Mason. 33 degree Mason. 33rd degree Mason.
Yeah. Buzz Lightyear. Got it.
Yep. You have the admin of NASA, a man by the name of James Edwin Webb, also a 33rd degree Freemason.
What does that mean?
Oh.
Oh, no.
I won't go too far into it.
Oh, dear.
Freemasonry devolves into two different rites. You have the Scottish Rite and then the other one that's not as interesting. The other rite has 3 degrees. The Scottish Rite has 33 degrees. So these are different levels of initiation and different secrets and ideas that are unlocked and given to you as you work your way up until you finally become a Master Mason. Suffice to say,
aliens, huh? Is that like 30, or would you say that's 33?
Oh, when you're learning about the aliens, I'm sure it's like 17. I don't think it's that
halfway
high
through.
Up.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
If you commit to that, they'll just give you that one for free. You know.
Cool.
Suffice to say, there is not a lot of 33rd degree Masons out there. Also, suffice to say, being a 33rd degree Mason is a very good way of getting your name appended to different conspiracy theories. And in this one, we have 3 of them at least. There could be more people that we don't even know. But also another part of this is that Buzz Aldrin did carry a Masonic flag to the moon. Now, that's about all we know for sure. But there is, like I said, a very, very, very cool story behind all of this. And it might be completely nonsense. In fact, I'd say it is. But I simply have to tell it. So this idea, this story, this conspiracy, blends the Freemasons' noted pursuit of mystery, okay, a desire for the esoteric, with ancient astrological ritual. And it all revolves around a man by the name of Farouk El-Baz, who is another supposed Freemason, but I've had a really hard time confirming that. Now, what I have confirmed about El-Baz is that he was instrumental to the mission due to his role in choosing when and theoretically where the moon landings would take place. See, El-Baz is an expert in desert ecology, and he was able to transpose his expertise in earthly deserts to the moon desert in order to identify the best landing spot for Apollo 11 on an area that we now know of as the Sea of Tranquility. This is all completely true. That's real. Farouk El-Baz, he did all of this stuff. He's amazing. There's a shuttle named for him in Star Trek. It's awesome.
Very cool.
Very cool. Now, the reason he did this...
Oh, my goodness.
...is that based on the landing time and landing site of Apollo 11, something very, very, very special and specific was about to happen in exactly 33 minutes. And that is the rising of Orion's belt over the lunar horizon. It was supposed to happen, like I said, exactly 33 minutes after the Eagle had landed. On board the shuttle, after they landed, shortly before Neil Armstrong became the first man to walk on the moon, the first Mason on the moon, Buzz Aldrin, took part in a ritual ceremony. one that, according to conspiracy theorists, was done in the name of the dying and rising god Osiris as an act of theophagy. Now, theophagy is the for anyone who knows your Latin and Greek roots, that means god eating, or the eating of a god. It is actually very common, especially in older, more ancient religions, but it is most commonly identified and understood today through the Roman Catholic variation of the Eucharist, wherein, because of the miracle of transubstantiation, the partakers in the Eucharist believe that they are consuming the blood and body of God, which is super hardcore and amazing. Now, here's the thing. If you read a lot of books, not even books, conspiracy websites.
There we go.
Because I didn't really find it in any books. I literally have books on Egyptian mythology.
Yep.
And on just primitive religion in general. But if you read these web pages, what you'll find is that Osiris was celebrated in this way. His followers would also eat a miraculous transubstantiation of his body and his blood. Okay? So Buzz Aldrin is not just a Christian doing a Christian thing on the moon, which they did have to keep silent because of a lawsuit that was going on at the time. It's a very fascinating, like, side story here that we're not going to go into. That's not who he was. He was a man who was worshiping Osiris and attempting to show his fealty to this god. So, because I hate to be the one to call it out, because Elbaz is Egyptian, the theory goes that his father, of whom we have almost no information about, had to have been very, very into the ancient Egyptian gods, as I was as a young and now not so young man.
I think we're all been there.
I think we're all still there. Therefore, Elbaz must have been lining everything up in order to perform a ritual worship of Osiris, partnering with the Freemasons to do it. Okay, the story goes like this. Elbaz chose the time and place for the lunar landing because, as we had mentioned before, the stars of Orion's belt would be rising just over the lunar horizon 33 minutes after touchdown. In the shuttle, Aldrin and Armstrong partook in this dark, ancient Egyptian ritual. And while Armstrong may have been the first man to walk on the moon, Aldrin's first step was exactly 33 minutes after landing, and right as the stars of Orion's belt crested the lunar horizon. Now, why do these stars matter? That's what you're all asking.
Why does 33 matter?
Because you're a 33rd degree Mason. 33 is just one of those numbers that just pops up. It just pops up. I don't know why it pops up, but it does. It's everywhere. That's how old Jesus was when he died. That's the highest number of masonry. That's 33 minutes here is apparently very
That's
important.
Three different things.
That's three things. Look it up. You'll find at least three more. I will put money on it.
Would you say there's 30 more?
No.
Oh.
No, I don't think so.
All right.
Now, why do these stars, Orion's belt?
Why, Sam?
Why do they matter?
Tell me so we can get on with our lives.
Now, if you look at the Apollo program logo, you're going to see three stars that make up the crossbar in the A. These three stars are, of course, the belt of Orion. We know this because the full constellation is included in the logo as well, so it's impossible for them to be anything else. And these three stars were the goal. The whole reason that these missions took place, not because we gave a darn about the space race or scientific exploration, but because of these stars at this place at this time, because the stars of Orion's belt are supposedly a very big deal in Egyptian myth. According to certain people, especially ancient astronaut theorists, the pyramids of Giza are built in such a way as to afford a direct alignment with Orion's belt. There are more than a few very good GIFs on the internet that show this in detail. Our friends over at Bibliotheca Pleiades have written an excellent article on this that I recommend if you really truly want to spend more time on it. But at the very core, the very basis of these things, what it comes down to is that it would appear that the three stars of Orion's belt could be understood as corresponding to the lineup of the pyramids, especially if you run the timeline back like 12,000 years. Then apparently they totally line up with absolutely no other thing that it could be. But the question is why? If this is true, ancient astronaut theorists have one explanation. The stars of Orion's belt are where the first ancient aliens came from to this Earth to develop humanity into their image forever. Because Osiris was the god of the dead, these three stars would have been heavily identified with him, as the world of the dead would be understood to be the world that the gods inhabited, the spiritual realm, the higher realm. Therefore, the pyramids are so aligned because upon the death of a pharaoh, his remains would be placed in the pyramid in order to open a channel of communication between Osiris and his world and the dead pharaoh and ours, in order to receive this dead pharaoh into the next world. Osiris also has bluish-green skin. And this is exactly why Buzz Aldrin, a 33rd degree Mason, waited 33 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon, remarking when he did, "What beautiful desolation," to be bathed in the light of the home of the gods, in order to channel Osiris and usher mankind into a new age of humanity. He was our stand-in. He was our substitute in communication with the divine, and all he learned in communicating with Osiris that he could have given to us, that he could have allowed humanity to flourish, all that he learned, he returned back to his Masonic brothers with, subverting the populace who could benefit from these revelations, but rather hoarding knowledge in order to feed their masters, the Illuminati, and keep the lower levels of humanity in complete subjugation and despair. Also, according to Hoagland, the Knights Templar and the Freemasons are at war, and every single thing that happens in the world is only an expression of that. Every good thing, every bad thing, it's all because the Freemasons and the Knight Templar are at war. And is that not the core of Assassin's Creed?
Yes, it is.
Jeez, Lou, man, he stumbled onto something.
What else? Hey,
what do you got to say to that, Jace?
God, no. It is. That was wild. Bravo, you got through it.
Thank you.
Once. That seems
complex.
Yeah, there's a lot of strings there.
There's a lot of strings
that has to weave that web of conspiracies.
That's all you got? That's what you got for that? I just screamed for 3, 4, maybe 5 straight minutes.
You didn't do it for me.
I did it for them. And maybe for myself, too. Who knows?
Let's be honest, Sam. You and I both know exactly how we both feel about all of those statements. Really cool.
They're dope as hell.
But come on.
Yeah.
Really?
Now, Jason.
Sam.
Do you remember?
I'm trying not to.
Maybe just like 13 minutes ago.
Okay.
When I said it's time that we swing our cosmic camera to one last theory about the moon landing.
Oh no. I mean, yes, I do, but no. Don't.
What if I told you? What if I told you?
Okay.
Do you remember Star Wars?
I remember Star Wars.
Do you remember when Han Solo
shot first? Yeah, dude.
He did shoot first. That villain. He looks up and he says, "That's no moon." And our final theory of the night is not about the moon landing. Our final theory is probably the only one that even gets close, but even then only on a metaphysical level, to what people think we were going to talk about in this episode, in which we say that the moon landing never happened. But I'm not saying the moon landing never happened. I'm saying there's no moon to land on.
What is it instead, Sam?
I'm so glad you asked.
I had a feeling.
You, through asking this of me, send me down one last path, one last journey in this lifetime, that I hope to be able to find, at the end of it, an old friend with open arms. Open, scaly, reptilian arms. We all know that the moon landing was faked. Not for any of the above reasons, or for any of the scientific questions that people have, but for one specific reason.
Uh-huh.
There is no moon. what we have up there in the sky, watching us every second of every day, is not a moon, but rather a hollow artificial satellite, which was created in order to create an illusion of reality for us, because we are not our own. You see, we're all a part of this one consciousness, this one being, one existence that is currently manifesting itself on this planet in 7.5 billion different ways at once. We are the segmented parts of a whole, experiencing nothing but ourselves over and over, and when we die, we rejoin this self, the perfect and complete. And yet, it should not be this way. We should not have to wait until we slough off this fleshy form to experience oneness and unity, to be in love with everything that is simply ourselves. No, there is something very wrong. And it's up there, in the sky, watching us every minute of every day. You see, in 1972, and then again in 1977, something very strange happened when Apollo astronauts walked on the surface of the moon. It rang like a bell. Now, scientists will tell you that this is something strange about the moon that was caused by moonquakes. But that's obviously not true. It doesn't even sound real. No, it points to a bigger and more nefarious truth that the moon is no moon at all and is indeed hollow. Now, this theory has been around for a few hundred years now, and piggybacks an older hypothesis, which we once covered in detail, which is that the Earth is hollow, as proposed by Edmund Halley back in 1692, and then repopularized in the last few weeks by Godzilla, King of Monsters, my favorite movie of all time.
It all comes back to Godzilla.
It really does. The idea of a hollow moon has a few different implications, one of the best of which is the spaceship moon hypothesis, wherein the moon was created by an alien civilization, was then either deliberately camouflaged or simply over the passage of time kind of got junked up and dusty, and currently exists as an artificial satellite, a base for aliens to interact with our world and to manipulate our tides and our minds. But there's another fun variation of this theory.
Oh, goodness, why?
And that is that humans from the future traveled back in time and created the moon because it is necessary for our survival.
But if it's necessary for our survival...
Nope. You can't argue with a paradox.
Exactly.
You're not allowed to.
Why not?
Proponents of this theory often point to some very strange coincidences, a few that we've mentioned before, but mainly strange mathematics, okay? The moon, in quotes, is exactly, I'm going to die,
237,000 miles away.
The moon it's exactly 400 times smaller than the sun.
Yeah.
But it's also exactly 400 times closer than the sun.
Yes.
Which you've talked about on your solar eclipse episode. That's the only reason solar eclipses happen.
Correct.
So now I have to ask.
The moon is slowly drifting away out of our orbit, if that helps.
Now I have to ask, what is the function of a solar eclipse? I know the mechanic.
There is.
What is the purpose?
No function.
If there is no function, then why was the moon built and placed so perfectly as to afford us moments of shielding from terrible radiation? Could it be
that's what the ozone is for?
Could it be we've destroyed it?
Could it be that
the moon intercepts deadly, harmful, kill shot rays of solar flares and solar activity from the sun, jumps in front of it as if it were, I don't know, what's a heroic movie? What's something that happens in where they jump in front of a bullet? It's that, but it's the Earth.
Okay.
And the moon is dying for us because she loves us so much.
I've never seen the moon rapidly accelerate in order to block the sun. Have you?
Jason, we're talking about beings who traveled back millions of years and set the moon exactly where it needed to be at just the right time to intercept each and every one of these terrible kill shots. Are you kidding me with this? Come on, man. You gotta follow the story.
Reverse time travel is not a thing.
The sun... Yep. is 109.22 times the size of the Earth.
Sam, how close are you right now to just meltdown.
This equals 4 × 27.322. The moon's circumference,
he's real close,
is 10928.8, which is 400 × 27.322. If you didn't catch that, 27.322 ended up as a variant of 4, or as a multiplier of a number that is a, what is it? It's a multiple of 4. Yeah, in every time. Oh. So there's that.
Cool.
We covered the dark side of the moon already, the far side of the moon. But that's a little weird that it even happens. But here's where it really gets. So the 400 times closer and 400 times smaller, that really trips me up. Here's another one. Our moon is the fifth largest satellite in the solar system.
Okay.
We are the fifth largest planet. There are 150 moons in our solar system, so why should we have this one? And if we can capture this one, why can't we capture others? It may be the fifth biggest overall, but compared to the relatively compared to the mass of its planet, us, it is comically large, being about 27% the size of Earth. Ganymede, which is the solar system's largest moon, orbiting its largest planet, Jupiter, is only a little over 3% the size of Jupiter. Some people, and I have absolutely no evidence or sourcing for this, claim that if you look at areas like the Great Rift Valley or the Grand Canyon, the amount of Earth missing from those areas...
Sam, no.
What? I know the Grand Canyon is sacred. All of what?
All of that's silly and wrong. Think about it for a split second.
Okay. Talk to me. Tell me.
All right.
Why?
So
why? Engage. Re-engage.
All right.
He's so back, everybody.
The running theory of
I drew how him out.
The moon was formed was early on when the planets were still essentially molding, a celestial body hit Earth, and some of it formed together, and the rest essentially fractured off and became the moon. There is definitely not enough surface area in the Grand Canyon or the Great Rift Valley to add up to the moon.
No, no, no.
The Grand Canyon was also cut from the Colorado River. We know this for a fact.
Maybe you do, but I don't.
Most of our landscape is either cut by rivers or glaciers, especially in the Northern Hemisphere.
What if that's not true, Jason?
But it...
Jason just looked like the devil himself. All I'm saying is that all of the Earth that is missing from the Earth equals the size of the moon. That's all I'm saying.
No, it doesn't. What does that even mean? Are you talking about like the Mariana Trench as well? Like where's the limit? So if we were like, say,
yeah,
even out the surface of the entire Earth.
Yeah.
And every little bit that has been gone equals the moon.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Who did the math on this?
Somebody once told
me. No.
The world.
No.
Was hollowed out for the moon.
I let you go on and on about this. There has to be a shred of reason.
All right. Next point then. We'll move forward.
Okay.
My next point is that the moon is running away from us.
That is true.
And why would it run away from us if it loved us?
It's because it's too large. It can't stay in our orbit.
Although we are only 4 times larger than the moon, the Earth is 81 times heavier than the moon, thus promoting the hollow moon theory. Anything for that?
It's almost like the heavy elements got formed into the Earth, and the lighter stuff got pushed out.
Well, now that could be. The moon rotates at exactly 1/100th the speed of the Earth's rotation. Again, I don't know if that's true. That's just what I read in a book. And by a book, I do mean a web page. The moon shares common material with the Earth, but, like Jason just said, no heavy metals have been detected. All of this coagulates into one terrible, awful, amazing truth. The moon is fake and was placed there by one of two groups, either benevolent future humans or evil reptilians. To return to the oneness, the reason that we are not in the higher unified stage of consciousness, don't you stand up and walk out on me, Jason. The reason we are not in our higher stage of consciousness, which we are supposed to be, is because in this virtual reality, the moon is an artificial amplifier. The moon lacks heavy metals, and yet it is abundant with crystals. And these crystals have been tuned to vibrate at a frequency similar to those crystals here on Earth. In order to amplify a chaos signal being sent from Saturn, which takes us down all of these rabbit holes that I had to go down, but I refuse to take you with me. This signal, then amplified by the moon from Saturn, is the cause of fear, disaster, war, violence, and all the natural consequences of individuals seeing themselves as more important than the whole of civilization and society, which can only happen because of this separation that it has caused. Down here on this planet, the reptilian bloodlines have mixed with human DNA to create hybrids. Human-looking individuals that are actually something else entirely, but who have been genetically conditioned to sync up with the moon matrix and act as the reptilians' unwitting pawns. We are meant for a higher way of being, but the moon disrupts and puts us in a psychic prison. And of course, there is one man behind this theory, and his name is David Icke.
So you know it's all wrong.
And that is all we have. All right. That's what I got, Jason. I'm not talking about that man anymore.
Good. No, I'm satisfied.
It is literally the last words on my notes because as soon as I typed it, I decided I was done.
Yeah, I questioned you about it.
You did?
Yeah. I should have questioned more.
Jason.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
I hate everything.
That's fair.
Good.
Any of these theories stick
out? I just love how it's the humanity. We love blaming other things.
Yes, we do.
For our own faults.
Yes, we do.
All of this stuff. Accountability. What's that? Who knows?
Accountability buddies.
We don't.
We could be accountability buddies with Mars. Mars will keep us straight.
Just because I'm the fool.
Yeah.
I already told you this, but I did watch an interview, or I guess listen to an interview of David Icke.
Please don't say that name. Go ahead. You can call him the Big D.
I'd rather not. That sounds like it's giving him some sort of credit.
Yep.
David. So
David.
He keeps going on and on about the reptilian mind. And guys, it's called the reptilian mind.
It's a metaphor.
Because it's basically the most primitive part of our brains.
It's a metaphor, you fools.
That we share with pretty much everything that has a brain.
So you're telling me that doesn't mean that there's an actual lizard brain in my brain.
No, Sam. Okay. In comparison.
Okay.
When a fetus is in development, the heart starts actually, basically as it develops, it's like it's evolving. It starts as a single chamber heart and goes to a two chamber heart and then three and then finally a four. Our brains have kind of done the same evolution over time. We had a quote unquote reptilian brain, which was again a very first primitive brain, which runs most of our fight or flight simulation, thought. It is not.
Seems really convenient.
It is not.
Seems like a lie.
A legitimate reptilian brain.
And?
That's it.
All right.
All right?
All right.
If anyone wants to fight me about it, go do some real research first.
You know that's not how this works.
I do. I do.
You know that's not allowed. This is a conspiracy you just don't understand, son.
I don't understand it. I really don't. I don't understand that's okay. Whatsoever, and it hurts my head.
It's okay, baby boy.
Anyway.
Now that you know, you know.
Why did you take me on this journey with
just
you?
Just like Pusha T says, when you know, if you know, you know. And now you know.
I know we're done.
And there's nothing that can take
Sam,
you
let's
back.
Wrap up the show. We're done here.
It's over.
You had your rant. Are you happy?
God has abandoned us. Yeah.
You
and at least we're back.
Mentally abused me. Emotionally, I don't know where quite I am yet.
And you go spend some nice time in the woods and think about this, and then it'll all be fine.
Cool.
Okay, guys, I'm going to do a quick announcement, and then we're going to read through this stuff, and then we're going to turn this off. So the quick announcement is that we are doing, ideally, right after this, we'll see, not timeline-wise, I mean in 2 weeks, ideally, we'll be doing a episode that is a question-and-answer episode. So if you want to talk to Jason more about reptilians or ask us questions about, like, paranormal stuff or whatever, I don't even know, just let us know. If we don't get enough questions, we might very well just drink a lot and talk about aliens. And that's okay, too. We're happy either way. So
the descent into madness.
Please, 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 please send your questions to notalonepodcast@gmail.com. What I want is I want it to say your first name and then question. The word question in the subject. That way I don't just ignore it.
That's a good plan.
Yep. So if I was going to send it, I'd do Sam, question. And then I'd write my question, which cannot be, what do you think about this thing that you've never talked about before? I'm not doing research for 100 different topics coming up. So anyway.
But that sounds way more fun. It'd be like hot takes.
Again, if we do not get enough questions, we'll just do something else. But literally 50 people voted yes in this poll on Twitter.
If I don't get 50 questions,
we should have at least 50 questions in any case. Other than that, guys, you can find us on Twitter. We're at Not Alone Pod. Jason, do you have anything you want to say before I wrap up?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, my mind is melted.
Yeah.
I'm upset
yeah.
at the world.
Yeah. There's mac and cheese waiting for me out there, so I'm just going to make it through.
Let's do this.
You can find us on notalonepodcast@gmail.com. I did say that.
Something.
You can find us on Twitter @notalonepod. You can find us on Facebook, Not Alone Podcast.
Guys, just Google us.
You could just Google it.
Just go on the internet.
You can
search for Not Alone.
You can find us on our Facebook group, which is Remember We Are Not Alone, a community for the strange. That's on Facebook. It's great.
That's the ticket.
It's so good. We'd like to thank a few different people. The first ones we'd like to thank, I can't remember the order that we used to do this in. If we did patrons first or reviews, I'm going to do reviews first. That's what heck yeah. I'm going to do reviews. So these are people who left us an iTunes review. Specifically, there are people who left us an iTunes review that doesn't say ramble too much and get off topic. Thanks, bud. So I'm going to call out everybody else, and that guy can just sit there.
That's the show. That's what we do. Show.
What do you want from me?
What do you expect?
So we would like to thank Lex Waltz, Jesse Here, Lily 1901, Saturn 69, Saturn.
Yeah, beaming us those messages, eh?
ID Beard, Buffy, Beth. I should have said, and Buffy, Beth, because that's gotcha. The last one, because the last one is that person I'm not going to thank. I'm going to go ahead and read Lex Waltz. It says, honestly, I love it more than lore. And that is saying something, because that dude nice. Has 3 books, a TV show, and a podcast. So, interesting. Lex Waltz says, I stumbled across this podcast looking for something to listen to after binging all of Lore. All right. And it's my...
Whoa.
Lore and I have a very complicated relationship. So, I have multiple Lore books. I have bought Aaron Mankey's books.
Uh-huh.
I am mad that I bought them, but I bought them nonetheless.
I think they're just too short. Like, I think they're too,
the
like...
episodes?
Yeah, I think they're too, like, short and neat and, like...
Yep.
They're just so...
Very... Bite size. So it's like you take a dumpling and you stuff that dumpling.
It's like
full of werewolves. You eat that dumpling. And here at Not Alone,
I want the whole platter.
Here at Not Alone, we offer you a veritable buffet. Okay, and we don't charge you a darn thing for it. So anyway, I do love Lore. I mean, I've listened to a lot of it. So this is why do I care what I say? Aaron Mankey's not listening to this, and if he is. Get out of my face.
What's up, Aaron?
Get out of my face. I don't need your pity. I stumbled across this podcast.
You assume it's pity.
Looking for something to listen to after binging all of Lore, and it's my absolute favorite thing. Sam and Jason present spooky stuff with both sincerity and skepticism, and the script and story is peppered. I love the way this person writes with sass and banter. Their enthusiasm for the show is obvious in their research, and they also have very pleasant voices, which is a plus for a podcast for sure. Literally, I can't praise Not Alone enough. I really think that it should be held as the gold standard of paranormal podcasts. As an aside, I really appreciate that they do content warnings for potentially disturbing content during the show and not just the show notes. See, and that's something that we haven't done recently, mainly because I don't feel like we've covered anything.
Nothing's been like super disturbing.
Yeah, it's just been spooky, but who knows? Maybe we'll get back to that. I had a super negative experience with another podcast that just dropped a ton of super descriptive gore. See, we were just talking before this opened about how I hate gore in movies and in everything. So again, I feel you. They dropped this with no warning, left me with a wicked panic attack while I was stuck on a plane. That sounds rough.
That sounds horrible.
It was wonderful to know that I don't have to worry about that here, and I'm super grateful for their consideration. Thank you, Lex Waltz.
Guys, we did not pay for that.
No, we really didn't. And that's astounding to me, because that was a professional level interview. Or not interview, review. I would have paid
thank
for that.
Thank you, Lex.
Thank you, Lex. You're the best. Anyway, thank you to everybody who has left us a review. We're at like 558 reviews that are ratings. That's awesome.
That's wild.
That's really cool. So feel free, head on over to iTunes, leave us a rating and a review. And even it doesn't have to be 5 stars. If it is mean, I am not going to say your name. Anything else, I'll say your name. So boom, there you go.
What if it's only mean to me?
Oh, bud.
There's quite a few out there.
Oh, bud.
It's fine. It's cool.
We both have people who love us a lot and hate us a lot.
That's fair.
And that's fine. Fair. I will say, out of the 500, so we're at 558 ratings, only 20 of them have been 1 star. So, like, we have 479 5-star ratings.
It's very polarized, isn't it?
It is quite polarized.
It's either you love us or you hate us.
Yep, that is true. And now...
This.
God, I love you, patrons. We are going to yell out all of these names. There's a fair amount. Where do we start? We'll start with Raffy, just to be safe. I'm pretty sure we did Raffy last time, but...
That doesn't sound familiar.
Well, that's why we're going to start with him. Okay. I know we did the other one because it's a website, and I was like, I don't know about this website if I should be shouting it out. It looked fine.
I remember you saying that.
Yep, exactly. Man. Okay, so get ready for some yelling. We'd like to think... I'm just going to do first names. We'd like to think...
Nah, we're doing the whole name.
Yeah,
well, come on.
They're changing it after 100 episodes. They're patrons. I'm not going to be lazy. One time on reviews, I read this person's name's Kijakijagur. So why would I give Kijakijagur? What? Why would I give them more than our lovely patrons? So, all right. We'd like to thank... Raffy Rodriguez.
Raffy.
I'm taking off my headphones. Wow. We would like to thank John Stein.
All right. Yeah, John.
We're supposed to be clapping throughout this. I don't know.
Oh, really?
Remember, we used to do that. We don't really anymore. Yep. I'm going to keep doing it. We'd like to thank Pedal Pedal.
Pedal Pedal.
We'd like to thank Catherine McManus.
Catherine.
We'd like to thank Matthew Cronkite.
Matthew.
We'd like to thank Elijah McFarland.
Elijah.
We'd like to thank Israel Ortiz.
Israel.
So you're not gonna clap. That's fine.
Nah, it's all you. Should we go intermittent? Like I clap once, you clap once.
I got an idea.
Really throw off the system. Oh God. Belly drum roll, please.
We'd like to thank Alice. All right.
Alice.
We'd like to thank.
What was that?
All right, spooky radio DJ. We'd like to is this still recording? Okay, thank God.
Hopefully.
We'd like to thank Rosie Puplet.
Rosie!
We'd like to thank Pleasing Terrors.
Pleasing Terrors.
That's Mike Brown. Pleasing Terrors is a great, great show. I'm sure you all listen to it. It's a lot better than ours. We'd like to thank... Esther Apel.
Esther.
We'd like to thank Katie.
Katie.
And we'd like to thank Oliver Kelso.
Oliver Kelso.
We don't usually say the last name there.
You kind of gave me a long pause there.
That's fair. If you would like to become one of our patrons, I don't know why you would, but if you do, you can go to patreon.com/notalonepodcast. It gives us money that can put us on YouTube. So that's where we are right
Sam,
now.
I think I need to go see a psychiatrist.
Yep, me too. So, yeah, so Not Alone Podcast, no, patreon.com/notalonepodcast. You get early episodes. For instance, if you were one of our patrons at the $3 level, you would have gotten this on Saturday, maybe Sunday morning, as opposed to getting it on Thursday or Friday, like you are right now. And I mean the before, obviously, not the one after. At the $5 level, you get access to our bonus episodes, which we do at least one a month. If we miss a month, like we did last month, because of a lot of different things going on, you get two of them this month. And by becoming a patron today, you get access to all of those going back. I think we're at like 7 or 8 of them now. So, yeah. Head on over there. If you can't leave a review, if you can't donate, I totally get it. I totally understand. And I want you to know I love you and I think you're perfect just how you are.
Just download the episode.
Just by listening. I mean, we are at 101 episodes and there are people who have been listening since episode one and I am just honored and floored. Honor floored. We're leaving now. This has been a heck of a lot of fun. We just passed the 2-hour mark. And there's mac and cheese waiting for me. So
I would like to state before we go.
Oh, yeah, please.
When I walked in the door, you're like, this is going to be a tight 1 hour.
You do know I was lying to you.
Always.
Okay.
Always.
Like that one. Sometimes I say that and I mean it.
Sam,
that one was a lie.
I don't know when you tell me the truth anymore. Now, who did it last? I believe it was.
It was Brian.
You're right.
Who did it before Brian? Reset.
Oh, dear.
It's episode 101. This is our chance to really get this evens odds thing going.
You want to shoot for it?
All right.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Is it 2 out of 3? I did beat you.
So wait, that means you say it?
No, that means I don't say it. So we can do 2 out of 3.
Yeah, I want to do 2.
Everybody
out of 3.
Does. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors.
1 and 1.
Rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors.
Damn. Okay. From now on, I am odds and you are even. And that's perfect. Just true. All right.
That's a lot of contemplation.
Remember, whether you have left everything you know behind to go on a grand adventure into the heart of space, or you have found the secret magical parchment, it will usher you into communication with a long-dead god. You are not alone.